You're listening to Beamercast number 10. It is December 2nd, 2009. Tonight, it's all about the 5 Series. We're going to be talking in depth about the new F10 5 Series that was just released. And we're going to be talking about racing. We're going to be talking about the 5 GT. Really everything. Vision concept. Everything you can imagine. But all in all, it is the 5 Series show. So stay tuned. Okay, we are back. As always, we have Michael, and this is Gabe. We're going to be, as we mentioned, talking a lot about the 5 Series with a couple other surprises later on. But first up, Michael, 5 Series, F10, big release. This is the huge volume seller for BMW, just outside of the 3 Series, of course. What do you think?
A little conservative, but I all in all, I like it. It looks really, really good.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
And I definitely like the character lines on it.
Yeah, and you throw it up against the 7 Series that was just released, the F01, and a lot of similarity. I mean, there's some differences in the detail of the front, but there are a lot of similarities there. And I think that some people have looked at that and said, okay, it's clear BMW is basically, taking it easy. They don't want to go down the road of the E60 and offend anyone. They don't want to have, these crazy headlights. They want to just create a car that can easily be liked. And I think some people are a little, kind of disappointed by that.
Yeah, I think people are disappointed, but at the same time, it's probably the same people that complained when the E60 came out and said, it was too over the top.
Yeah.
And there was too much going on.
No, I totally agree. I mean, from my personal perspective, I think that it's a good-looking car. It's a handsome car. It's the same thing for me when I look at the E39. I know I'm going to get a lot of people that disagree with me on this. When I look at the E39, I look at that, and it's a very safe, handsome car that will age well and be classic. I look at the E60, and I say that's a very avant-garde, forward-thinking car. I actually think it's more interesting than the E39, but it's probably not as classic. And I think, BMW has basically said, listen, we want to go after that. We want to hit that E39 mark again, where, in 10 years' time, people are going to look at this car and say, that's the quintessential 5 Series.
Yeah, it's almost like they took the best of the 7 and the best of the current, E93 Series, mm-hmm. and mixed it in a pot and came out with the 5 Series.
Yeah, I think that's fair, I don't know. It'd be interesting to actually talk to some of the designers, and we may have a chance over the next month or so. But it'd be interesting to talk about what was behind this this look. I mean, this is a very different. I wouldn't say different in terms of like look and feel, but I mean, you've had for years now BMW kind of pushing the envelope, and now you've got a 7 Series that comes out that I think is actually more aggressive and more interesting than the 5 Series.
Yeah, I would agree definitely with that. And the other thing is interesting thing is that the 5 GT is much more avant-garde, I guess you could say, much more trend-setting with mm-hmm. some of the lines and the design on that than the 5 Series, but maybe that's why this is a little bit safer.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. In fact, I mean, looking at that, at the 5 GT, just the headlights alone, there's just something really dynamic about them. And you look at the 5 Series and you get this front character line that is kind of, it's a little more restrained, I think, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and actually the lower front grille and the air dam, as it were, is also less muscular mm-hmm. than I thought it would be. It's a gorgeous looking front end, but at the same time, I really thought it'd have a little bit more angry look to it.
Yeah, I do agree. I think it's restrained. I think it definitely is. I will say that we're looking at the standard, and I think BMW is going down this road more. The standard car is becoming a little bit more, and I hate to say this, but a little bit more bland, and you've got your M Sport package that sort of dials it back up a notch ahead or a notch above what we'd expect. So it's very aggressive. Then, of course, you have the M5, which is the ultimate expression.
Yeah, I definitely see that. And then also, since, you know, we in the U.S. can get the M Sport, that makes, I think, a bit of difference in the actual base model design, as it were. You know, in the past, we didn't receive that. So it did need to have a little bit more sporty look, I think, than a true base product would. But now that we actually get the M Sport here and we're going to get the more aggressive styling, I think they can be a little safer with the general product.
Yeah, definitely. Well, okay, so styling aside, let's get to the product itself. Interior, and I guess not to throw styling completely aside, interior, great job. Love it. They're obviously taking what they've done with the 7 Series, which I think we all agree is fantastic, and I think they're sort of iterating on it slightly. They've got, I think, to this point, the best-looking, most functional interior I've seen on a modern BMW.
Yeah, definitely agree with you on that. And the other nice thing about it is they went back to that E39 driver-oriented 7-degree angle. You know, yep. That's a huge improvement, I think, than the flat dash that we've been experiencing. I mean, I had an E60, and yes, there was some slight curve to it, but nothing like this, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. And I think, you know, you've got the technology, though, that's really nice. That's from that 7 Series. You know, you have the black display. You've got, you know, just, I mean, everything there in a package that is a little bit more driver-oriented. So this is really what we've been asking for a long time. New, improved iDrive. We've got that sort of, and I'm using air quotes here, wraparound cockpit, so to speak. I think it's a really exciting change. And I think the quality, where BMW's right now with their interiors, their quality is fantastic. And anybody who's been in a modern 7 Series will tell you it is impeccable. I mean, compare that to a 7 Series or a 5 or even a 3 from 10 years ago, and it's a completely different kind of car.
Yeah, the 7 definitely changed the whole character of BMW interiors when they released that. And it's definitely a step up or a notch above what it was. And, you know, the 5 GT continues on with that, and now the 5 Series as well beneath that. So it's interesting how the product line, even though it's, you know, you're taking it from the top or the highest end vehicle and stepping it back, the quality is still there.
Yeah, and there's one thing that's bothered me. I've never actually verbalized it before, but I think the E46, which I've owned several, and the E90, I think actually the E46 has a better quality interior than the E90.
I think I would agree with you in the later years of the E90. Yeah, I think they definitely made some changes for the, you know, worse when it comes to quality in some of the later year models. I think when they first initially launched it, it was definitely a different product. It definitely had some different things going on there.
Well,
even
so,
like just even the interior lights on the, you know, the map lights and things like that. When they first came out with the E90, they actually had plastic covers over them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the plastic covers disappeared. And they did the same thing with the E46, you know, save a dollar here, save a, you know, a quarter there.
So the other thing I would say is, and coming out, you know, sort of going along that that idea, I'd say the E39 in some ways has a better or just a better feeling, you know, higher quality interior than the E60.
Yeah, no, I will agree with that as well.
Especially the early E65 series. And, it didn't wear well. The design of the thing, you know, without iDrive, you ended up with this tiny little square digital display, which is kind of ridiculous. I'd be curious to see how BMW, I mean, we know that navigation is still an option, which, I mean, we'll talk about in just a second. It's still an option on the 5 Series. Will BMW size down the LCD display if it's not optioned with the navigation?
Yeah, it's a smaller display screen, and it's going to have less pixel density.
I mean, that's
than the nav screen.
Ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about a car that starts, you know, over $50,000. I'm just throwing it out there. I'm just guessing around that. And you're telling me that, you know, I get a cut rate display even without navigation. So let's talk about navigation. I mean, BMW charges more than $2,000 sometimes for navigation. And we saw this week, I believe it was either Kia or Hyundai. No, I believe it was actually Suzuki offering navigation, one of those brands, for $400. Oh, no, you know what?
Yes, Yeah, with a Bosch-designed head unit.
Who was that? Was that Mazda?
I can't recall the manufacturer, but there's a couple. I think Suzuki actually is giving them away now as standard on certain models, but Nissan, I believe, is the one with the Bosch.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. In fact,
it has low pixel. You know, it's going to have low pixel density, and it's, you know, not going to be anything crazy. But at the same time, it's cheap. It's $400. I mean, you're not spending, you know, $2,000 on something for a car that's already costing $50. I mean, that's the only problem I have with this whole nav being optional thing. It really should be standard if you're spending that much money. I can understand doing it in the 3 Series because there are different markets. And
totally agree.
It's a high-volume car.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 5 Series, I think we're, you know, beyond that.
And I agree. And I think for the 7, nav standard. For the 5, nav is standard. If it's not standard, I think that BMW needs to. And I think we've heard this before. You read it in the Roundel. You hear it everywhere. BMW needs to rethink the pricing structure. There are other ways to make money on a car. And I think charging $2,000 for navigation is outrageous. It's just absolutely outrageous.
Yeah, I mean, and you spread that across so many models and things like that, I'm sure they're recouping their costs quite rapidly, you know, from for the development of the nav system and all that. But it's just, that's the one that when I was reading the large release and the BMW NA release, which was more concise, was that, you know, nav is an option. And that's something I wasn't really anticipating, you know, just in the price point and everything like that. I can understand maybe if you're going to do the 528, which is a U.S.-only car, as a price point car, and maybe introduce it that way. But I think the 535, the 550, I think the 550 will have it standard. But I just almost feel like it's something that you automatically assume now with luxury. Like, it used to be leather seats.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's navigation.
So navigation aside, I mean, that's certainly a disappointment. I would say overall, BMW has really, really hit a home run with this car. I think from a styling standpoint, I mean, this is all initial. Nobody's driven it yet, so this is all initial. But they have, I think, created something that stylistically, you know, sort of checks all the boxes. You know, maybe they didn't hit it out of the park. You know, maybe the home run thing didn't happen, but I mean, maybe it's, I think what they've done is they've checked all the boxes. They've done what they needed to do. Interior looks fantastic. Engines, again, of course, these are the engines we expected, and of course they're great. On paper, this is a great car. Now, here's the thing. We haven't driven it yet, obviously, but there's one thing that worries me, and it's weight. This 5 Series has taken a few steps back in terms of use of aluminum and in the way that they use that weight-saving material to bring curb weight down. We're looking at, the F10 being, you know, over 200 pounds heavier than the E60, the previous generation 5 Series, in you know, some trims. I mean, we actually had story in Bimmerfile last week about the 530D, which we don't get in the U.S., but just it was the one thing that sort of stood out as a carryover in terms of engines from the E60 to the F10. That particular car is 297 pounds heavier than the version that came before. 300 pounds heavier.
Yeah, it's a definite increase in weight, and, you know, talking to people at BMW, they knew that the weight was going to go up because of the decreased use of aluminum in the front structure. And really what that was cost. It cost a lot of money to develop that front end for the E60.
Mm-hmm.
Also repairs and insurance. Insurance companies were charging more money to insure the 5 Series because of the fact that if you were in a frontal impact, you were going to be okay, but the car wouldn't be. So they'd more apt to total it out, or it'd be very involved in fixing it.
You'd have to replace the whole front end. So how does Audi do it? You know, that's the question.
If you got a serious enough accident, they'd come clip forward and...
But how does Audi do it? You know, I mean, how does Jaguar do it? I mean, these two cars, the Jaguar, is it the XJ, I believe, Audi A8. I mean, these cars are made of aluminum, not only just, you know, the suspension, but structurally they are aluminum. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I mean, am I missing something here? I mean, I feel like there's there's got to be a solution around that.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, I'm not sure with how that all works with that. But also at the same point that Jaguar's not really profitable is the other issue.
That's actually,
so I guess,
so that's a good point.
You know, so, I mean, that's the other thing, too. But, and the other issue was, I know some of the crash testing done in the U.S. said that the E60 was not necessarily a best pick or a good for side impact, which had a lot to do with seat positioning, weight of the dummy, and things like that. And it was BMW's engineers didn't see eye to eye with whoever was doing the testing. I think it was the IIHS. But so I know that this car, the F10, a lot of focus was put into side impact testing, and a lot of the high strength steel and heaviness of the car is actually lower, you know, along the lower part of the car to improve the side impact, which, you know, not doesn't necessarily impair handling because the center of gravity is still low. But yeah, it's going to impair everything else secondary to the weight gain.
There's certainly more mass there. And I mean, we know BMW has done a great job of masking mass. You know, the X6 is a great example of that. But ultimately, that will catch up to you.
It definitely will. You know, and I think the other thing, too, is they've come a long way with the power plant design. So we have the N55 is going to debut in the GT. It's an inline six, twin scroll, single turbo vehicle with direct injection and Valvetronic. It'll be a first to combine all of those things in one power plant. So it's supposed to be more efficient and more responsive than the current inline six twin turbo, which will be interesting. Mm-hmm.
So that's the interesting thing to me. I mean, we've got a single turbo that now it will have less torque. That's my understanding.
Same torque. They're able to get 300 out of it.
So, but we all know that the twin turbo inline six is grossly underrated. I mean, we've seen numbers as high as 350 horsepower. So in reality, in the real world, what I'm personally concerned about is that we're actually getting an engine that is 50 foot-pound less torque or 50 horsepower less. Or, I mean, just, you know, these numbers are obviously very, very rough. But, I mean, it's going to be appreciably, you know, less powerful than what we had before. That's my concern.
It may be. Yeah, no, I mean, it may be as far as actual power versus rated power, it may be less. But I'm not sure because from everything I've read and everything I've seen about this motor, it makes sense because of the use of the Valvetronic and the boost that they're using and the turbo that they're actually using to actually, it should actually equate to the same performance as the N54 in reality, secondary to a lot of the newer technology that's in this thing. And it's actually going to have better throttle response, which is actually the neatest point of the whole thing. There's really going to be less lag. I can't wait to drive this thing. I'm actually very, very excited to see what they've been able to do with this twin scroll thing.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think that, you know, it had to go this way. I mean, and even from my perspective, I mean, you've got one less turbo to essentially fail, or one less turbo to carry around, and it's less weight. I mean, I think they're
coupling it with the new 8-speed. Which is also better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is also going to be better for fuel economy. And actually, having driven it extensively, it's able to skip gears fluidly. It doesn't hunt. It doesn't peck. Mm-hmm. And the 8-speed is actually really quite a nice thing. And they will be transitioning BMW across the line by 2012. So for model year 2013, all of them that are currently 6-speed autos should the 8-speed. That's the plan.
That'd be interesting. So the other thing that, speaking of the automatic, and for those who listen to the show, you probably know we're not big fans of automatic transmissions in general, but this is the first time that BMW has allowed, I would say, a different paddle configuration behind the steering wheel on an automatic transmission that is essentially mimicking what you see on an SMG or a DCT transmission, which is a minus paddle on the left side and a plus paddle on the right side.
Yeah, that's right. They're going full pull, F1 style.
Mm-hmm. I think it's great. I mean, this is fantastic. You know, this is something that I think we've needed. The design that was there before is very usable. You know, it's very safe, but ultimately it's not very fun.
No, it's a different feel. And with this car, they will still be doing the regular automatic and the sport automatic versions. So one will be the regular shifting, and then the other one will have the technically updated pack, so it'll shift quicker.
So tell me about the sport automatic. What's in that sport automatic?
Well, I mean, think of it the same way as the 335 comes with an automatic transmission, and it shifts fast. It's got, you know, the upgraded torque converters and all that. So that's the sport automatic in the 5 series.
Okay, fair enough.
But both automatics with the paddles, I'm told, if you opt for the paddles, they both will come with the pole, the new one. And I would imagine that, you know, BMW tends to trickle down with technology and things like this. I would imagine you'll see this coming soon to a 3 Series near you.
That sounds fantastic.
So the pole will make it across the line. Yeah, I think that's great. I think that's a good step forward. And it's more of this, you know, sporting image, you know, not just luxury, but also going along with sport, you know, making it functional.
Well, we don't have all the details around the 5 Series quite yet. I mean, we've got engines, we've got trim packages. We haven't seen, I haven't seen a shadow line exterior 5 Series that would, to me, indicate a sport package. And correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, but I haven't seen something that looks to me like it's, you know, equipped with a sport package with, you know, wheels that look like they're on a sport package and... Again, channel line exterior. I haven't seen that yet.
From the original photos, I'm not sure if I recall that, but I'm almost positive this car will. I know the GT comes with the shadow line and the sport package. This will also probably have an a la carte all-wheel steering, so it will not be included in the sport pack, I would imagine. That's what they did with the 5 GT, and I also believe for 2010 they broke it out of the sport pack for the 7. So that will be interesting to see how that goes as well.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, as we see BMW kind of refining their American products, I mean, Channel Line exterior seems to be now across the board. If you order sport package, you get it. It's also going to be obviously cool to see the M Sport package show up on this car as well. You know, there's a lot of options now, and as we all know, modern BMWs, you know, you sort of need to order the right options to make it the car that the enthusiast will love. And that's, and, you know, sort of those details are what really, I think, you know, we're all kind of looking forward to now.
Yeah, we're definitely looking forward to it so we know how to package the car. Mm-hmm. The interesting one thing that I found really interesting is that the 550 will be available in an XI form.
So
there will be a V8... X-Drive mm-hmm. equipped 5 Series, which will be the first time that's ever happened.
Hmm.
Have a V8 with X-Drive outside of, you know, an X vehicle.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's absolutely the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, but you know what? That's quite all right. I know, Michael, you have owned an all-wheel drive BMW. I will put my hand up and say I think they're ridiculous 95% of the time. But
I will say that they didn't offer my car without it.
Well, I mean, we can respectfully disagree on this, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of listeners will agree or disagree. But to me, you know, that rear-wheel drive with snow tires is all I need. And especially, well, again, I mean, it's, you know, just it things change in the automotive world, and sometimes we're not exactly happy to see that happen. So. You know, the spread of all-wheel drive, you know, within the BMW ranks, I think is, well, you know, it's, to some degree, it's a little sad to see from an old enthusiast.
Yeah, from an old school approach, I guess you could say that.
The, and the I'm only not problem even that is old either, so it's, you know.
It's more of an old school thing. Yeah. The problem is the take rate, I think, in the Northeast is over 90% for all-wheel drive.
Yeah, well, in Chicago, where I'm from, it's even the coupes, even the 335 coupes, it's, I would say, and this is just me seeing it, I'd say 66% seem to be all-wheel drive. And it's
that's
sad.
That's about right.
I think it's really sad, but it's what sells.
Well, to be honest with you, what would make me happy is I had been hearing early rumors that BMW was finally going to come out with its own sport pack, as you were, like sport suspension for the all-wheel drive in this 5 Series. It was going to usher that in. I haven't gotten confirmation of that. I haven't read it in a press release yet, so can't say it's actually going to happen, but I would be honestly thrilled if they created an all-wheel drive car that actually could have a lower suspension.
See, this is where, and again, so this is I'm old school here. I think people should be punished for ordering all-wheel drive. I think that they should be put in a corner where they can have their car that sits an extra inch and a half up off the ground because they've ordered all-wheel drive because they're scared to drive, you know, in anything but dry pavement. And I know that's ridiculous, but I have to think that BMW engineers have kind of been in that position. I mean, it's a situation where the public wants something that they don't need, but they think they need it, so they want to buy it. And BMW, BMW should probably sell it to them.
Yeah, and I would have normally agreed with you on that until the X6 and X5 M's came out. And that system and that is just amazing.
No, and you're right. I mean, having driven the X6, not the M, but just the standard X6, I mean, I know, and I've driven Audis before. I know that all-wheel drive can be special, and I know that it can be, you know, an enthusiast car, but there's a purity lost. Now, that said, there's a certain purity lost with any new BMW, except for maybe some of the M cars. I mean, that's just the reality of a modern car. So, you know, it's almost a question of, like, how far do you want to go?
Yeah, how far do you want to delve off the cliff of that?
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting.
But that actually is a good segue. That's a good segue, Gabe, into a car that's actually getting a little bit more sporty and more performance and maybe going back to a little bit more of its heritage, the Z4.
Well, and this is interesting to me because having tested the Z4 earlier this year, it was I loved it. I think it was a fantastic car. It is better in every way than the previous Z4, except for one area, and that is handling and feel, and that just happens to be the area that we all care about. You know, so it's interesting to me to see to hear about this performance. It looks like a performance model that's going to address some of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of exciting. It's going to have bigger, meaner-looking wheels, which will not, unfortunately, be offered in black. They'll be silver. More aggressive air dam. And I'm hearing also that it's going to get a bump in horsepower and torque. And the torque is up to 330 pounds, mm-hmm. Very similar to the 7RR option on the X6, which is like a performance upgrade option. Mm-hmm. And that's, this is all not official yet, but from a very reliable source, I will say that.
It's interesting.
But it looks meaner.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I mean, looking at this, you just assume it's just the M Sport, you know, aero kit, different wheels. But, you know, I think to have this be something that's tangible, that's something that's really interesting, I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, and the other thing is with the introduction of this new inline six, the current twin turbo six is going to see some of these performance upgrades here and there, you know, kind of on its way out. You know, they're transitioning it out. It's not going away anytime soon. We'll probably see it until the end of the 1 Series. But there will be a little tweak here and there and performance offerings just to liven it up a little bit.
So the twin turbo is going away entirely?
It will be, not in the near future, though. I mean, it's going to be phased out. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be hanging around very long. Yeah, probably till, you know, I'll say 2012.
The twin turbo, it's a shame because, I mean, we all know that, you know, the twin turbo can be dialed up and it can be really, truly special. But the problem, of course, is that, you know, the manual transmission, for instance, BMW themselves don't even, you know, they don't even, tune it up over, 320 foot-pound of torque just because they're concerned about the transmission alone. I mean, I think there's certainly some drawbacks to tuning it up. And I guess if you think about it that way, this new single turbo engine, in terms of the long run, maybe a better option.
Yeah, and the aftermarket's going to have a real tough time tuning the new one. So for all you out there on the fence about buying a current generation 335 or 135, you should do it if tuning is what you want to do, because as soon as these new engines come with the Valvetronic, it's going to be tough.
Well, but you say that. BMW has said every single time they release a new engine that it's going to be tough to tune it. Is this really going to be different?
Well, I just think with the Valvetronic, no one's actually hacked that yet. So maybe if they put all their force and effort into it, they could. But no one's really come out with a real good system. I mean, just imagine if you can make the M3 breathe better without force inducting it.
Yeah. True. Well, I guess we will see. So with that segue comes another one. What is with this rumor that BMW is going to be cutting more racing teams?
I think it's hopefully it's a whole bunch of nonsense, or if they really are, they have a plan, and that's to put every single good driver they have on the same team.
Well, I think so. For those who don't follow the WTCC, World Touring Car Championship is championship. I think it's just championship car. Is that it? Regardless, it's touring cars, and it is
World Touring Car
Championship. It is unbelievable. I mean, it's like NASCAR going around road courses with real cars and good drivers. So if you can imagine wheel to wheel, bumper to bumper racing, going around road courses all over the world with production based cars. The only problem with that is that BMW over the years has dominated. Well, why have they dominated? Weight distribution, rear-wheel drive. So BMW has been penalized, and they call it there's a specific name for it within the WTCC, but it's I think it's like success ballast or something yes. like that. Essentially, they're adding weight to your car if you win a race. So BMW, having been quite successful, has had quite a lot of weight added to their cars. And because of that, BMW is saying, listen, we're seriously considering actually pulling out because we feel that you're making it impossible for us to win, even though we clearly have a car that would be dominant. And, you know, I mean, and you can understand their position on that. It's really difficult to see a Seat or a Chevrolet Cruze win these races when, I mean, we all know, you know, they have nothing on a 3 Series, yet, you know, they're winning these races in relative stock format because there's so much weight added to these 3 Series. I think, you know, I think that the idea of adding, you know, all the best drivers to one team is interesting, and I mean, I hope it works. If that's what they do, I hope it works.
Yeah, it's going to be definitely interesting, but at the same time, I've been hearing that unofficially that the ALMS team will be back at full force next year. All the drivers will return. I've also been hearing rumors that there might be some driving going on in Germany with actually the same team where the WTCC is going to be hanging out with Team Schnitzer. Which could be interesting, you know, if BMW actually gets a team over there in Europe to compete in Le Mans series, mm-hmm. not even the 24 Hours of Le Mans. That's a whole other can of worms, that race is. That's a show in and of itself, how to get into the Le Mans. But it would be quite interesting. I just don't think that, you know, BMW really is in a position right now to pull its plug on more racing, because you're going to lose a lot of just brand marketing. Because if you're not racing anything, what are you doing?
Well, I mean, that's so much their brand, and it's a big change. It's certainly a big change. So, Michael, you got a chance to take a look at this vision concept up in personal. I mean, you got very, very close to this thing. You have some great photography on the site. What do you think? What do you think of the shape, the lighting, the design, everything?
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't know what to think before going to see it, and seeing it up and close like that was kind of eye-opening, because it's a very futuristic vehicle, but at the same time, it's not so far out that it wouldn't be there. The rear end is definitely a departure from the norm with those little brake lights and everything like that, but the aerodynamics in it is just amazing, how they shaped the side of the car and how they shaped actually even the door handles to channel the air back around the car to keep the drag as minimal as possible. It was pretty interesting to see how they did that. And it's definitely a special car for everyone that's listening. If you're in the LA area, it'll be at the LA Auto Show for, I think, the next 2 weeks. So get out and check it out. It's really a neat car. And the one thing that's worth noting is that there is the drivetrain, the diesel, the 3 liter, and the two electric motors and all that. That's actually a prototype in theory as well. There's not a working model of that yet. So this car is propelled by just an electric motor right now, with the battery packs down the center of the car, same setup as it would be. But they are working on completing the engine. It's going to be married to the car as well. So that's really neat.
So this engine, this diesel hybrid, is something that we should expect that they're working on for production then?
Well, they're working on it in concept. So I'm not sure if it'll actually make it to production. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to people at BMW, BMW AG and BMW North America about this, the concept of a diesel hybrid. And it's a double dipping. So if the U.S. market would see it, it would be, you know, ungodly expensive at this point, because you're paying for the hybrid and you're paying for the diesel technology. So that's not something that's really feasible unless it needs to be done for emissions reasons. Mm-hmm. So if that's what they have to do to hit the emissions point, that's what they're going to have to do, and they're not going to have really much of a choice. So that's the other conundrum of the whole situation, but they are prepared for that. So that's the other thing. Most manufacturers aren't prepared for that yet. They're going with all these electric only cars, where BMW is not putting all of their eggs in one basket. Mm-hmm. They're working on different technologies to meet the emissions and meet performance at the same time.
So one last topic that is actually it just went live on Wednesday today. Autocar is reporting that BMW is going to be extending their relationship with PSA, Peugeot and Citroën, for a front-wheel drive platform. So that means, you know, the next generation Mini or some next generation Mini is going to be riding on this new platform, which is different from what they have now. The current Mini rides on its own platform. So that's interesting. But the other interesting thing that they mentioned is that BMW themselves likely will be using this platform for BMW product. This is a front-wheel drive platform, of course. The notion is that, you know, it internally it's not particularly an exciting or you know, nobody's happy to talk about this this project, yet it is something that seems to be inevitable. You know, BMW has certain goals to reach by 2018, and you know, to reach those goals, they need some products that will get them there, and they specifically need more, you know, lightweight front wheel drive products that are going to get high mileage. And you know, where do they get that? You know, if they can't sell enough Minis, it's going to have to be front wheel drive something else, and the other brand is going to have to be BMW then.
Yeah, I mean, that's the scariest part of the whole thing. You start mixing in front wheel drive cars into the BMW lineup, and you kind of deteriorate the brand, and that's something they've been they've focused on avoiding for the longest period of time. So I still have a really hard time thinking that they're going to go front-wheel drive with anything. Kind of goes against all their DNA, as it were. I think they had a better chance of, say, buying up another brand on the cheap and just using that brand.
But the problem is you have to sell that brand, you know, and the thing is BMW, you know, it sort of sells itself to some degree. I mean, certainly they have to work at it, but it certainly sells itself. So if that's the case, then, you know, just to, like, let's just say you'll use the Triumph name, which they own. Well, who's going to buy a Triumph, you know? Not that many people. I mean, not that many people know about the brand. It's unproven. So if they do that, you know, there's a real chance they won't have the number that they need to actually have sold.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think that's what happened with Mini. You know, Mini was dead for a while and revitalized by BMW. No one knew what they were going to get initially with that. So I think they can actually use that to their favor.
Maybe, but I mean, that was a lot of money. It was a lot of money to launch that brand. I think it's going to be tough for BMW. It's going to be very, very difficult. Don't get me wrong. I loathe the idea of a front-wheel drive BMW. I mean, it sickens me. But, you know, if they can't do it with Minis, selling enough Minis, then, God, I think I don't know what other options they have.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of Minis, I was just looking at the numbers, which we'll probably get into. But what happened with Mini?
For sales?
It just seems like it fell off the face of the earth as far as sales go. Yeah, what is going on there?
Well, Mini was down 20% for November. They had a pretty good year. Okay, so this is obviously 20% down from last November. It's at 19 technically. Last November they had a very good month, but I know it was like right in the middle of all this craziness with the economy. But if you remember, and you have to think back, it takes about 2 months for Minis to come in once they're ordered. So the crisis really hit last October, and then October, November. So you'd think, like, well, sales should be up then this year because nobody was buying cars last November. Well, the thing is, people actually ordered their Minis because, remember, people normally order Minis. They don't buy them off the lot. They ordered their Minis in August and September, and they ordered a lot of Minis during August and September of 2008 because, if you remember, gas prices were like $4 or $4.50 a gallon. So Minis were selling like crazy. They had nothing on the lot. So people were ordering these cars like crazy. And what happened is they ordered a lot of cars in August, September of 2008, and a lot of them came in November of 2008. So that means that the production and the sales, ultimately the sales, were very high for November of 2008. And this year, despite the fact that things are going pretty well, you know, I mean, inventory is looking pretty good, and they're selling a lot of cars. They could not keep up with this just insane demand for Minis from 2008 November.
Well, that now that you explained it, it makes more sense. When you just look at the numbers, it's just like, oh my.
Yeah, no, and yeah, I mean, I would totally agree. But I think if you think about it that way, and just know that, you know, this is a situation where it's really almost an anomaly of sorts. You know, I think Mini can kind of be forgiven a little bit. I mean, they're doing pretty well. I mean, they had a good month last month. I'm sure if you take this month away, look at November, January, when sales are down throughout, I think Mini's going to be actually looking pretty good.
Very nice. And it's going to be, you know, the other thing going forward with all these new vehicles that BMW's got going on will be how they actually impact sales, if they actually cannibalize from within, or, you know, they actually get some new market from other buyers, like the 5 GT, for example.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a great question. I mean, it's a really great question. Who knows? You know, it's certainly going to cannibalize some sales, but you're right, we just do not know yet.
Yeah, it's such a polarizing vehicle, too. It's great to see some of these comments.
Yeah, it's
about how hideous it is.
And, yeah, well, I have to admit, I'm I'm kind of not sold on it either myself. I mean, it's I need to see it up close. I need to drive it. Until then, it's difficult to kind of grasp in just photos.
Yeah, it's true. It's not a photogenic vehicle at all, but it definitely looks better in person. And should have the full review up shortly. It should go up actually this right before this weekend, before the car actually launches. That was the plan.
Great, fantastic. Well, I think that thus ends another Bimmercast. We're in double digits now. That's pretty exciting.
Broke on through.
Yeah. Oh, one thing I wanted to mention. I'm currently I'm currently driving for it's a rental. It's a long story. A Camaro SS, 426 horsepower, American muscle car, and I have to say, it makes you really appreciate what you get in a BMW.
But doesn't that have a beer cooler underneath the rear seat?
Does it really?
I have no idea. Sure, I mean, it does.
Who knows? You know, my car actually came standard with a piece of wood lodged in the rear suspension.
I mean, did it?
No joke. It's like a 1x1 by, you know, like 36 piece of wood, essentially trim, lodged in between the control arm and some other suspension bits. And it is lodged in there. I tried to kick it out, and it's... because it bottoms out every time I hit a bump. So it's a little funny. But I will say, you know, it's a $33,000, $34,000 car with limited slip, with 426 horsepower. It may wallow like crazy over bumps. It's poorly damped. Interior is a joke. But it's got limited slip, and it's got 426 horsepower. So there is a certain amount of fun.
Yeah, you put a lot of ponies and an LSD in it, and it's fun, but you got to watch out for those falling trim pieces on the interior. I had an experience where the A-pillar plastic piece fell off when I was driving.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because there's actually a piece of the air dam, and the plastic trim is actually dragging on the ground right now. So, no joke. I'll just send you a picture. But anyway, yeah, it is. It is quality. But on that note, we'll be back next week with Bimmercast number 11. We're going to wrap up the LA show. Until then, this is Dave Pierce.
Michael Phillips.